away.
Don't you look at the Eagles as having like Jalen Carter as their ultra? I know he's not coming off the edge, but like I just feel like that is their ultra disruptive player there. And it's also a defense that's built on just having a million guys and having Vic Fangio drawing it up and scheming it up.
The Eagles are the favorite among the odds makers if Watt were to change teams.
How many?
3-1.
Give me like the top five. Eagles 3-1.
Eagles 3-1. Niners 4-1. Mm-hmm. Lions 6-1. Mm-hmm. Patriots 7-1. Seahawks 9-1.
Patriots doesn't. I know that people feel like they're on the rise. I happen to think that.
So do I.
I know they
so does Donnie. That's scary. We all think they're going to be good this year.
I know that they need defensive talent because it's still May and they've got to continue bolstering that roster. That feels like a weird match, though, right there.
No Bills?
I would think, yeah, that's another one.
No.
Like, Bills just
I don't think Bills have the cap space, Don. I think they're falling off the radar here. I think they're cap poor. They're one of the lowest, actually. The three teams in the division obviously have the worst odds because it just seems...
Just imagine teaming up Watt and Garrett.
Like it would never happen. And then you've got the Chiefs 50-1. The Bills are 45-1 to trade for him.
Completely off the grid. I don't think it's quite like Tampa Bay Rays level with a guy like Roseman, but he's just the best in the business. And I would always feel like in any transaction with him, I would have a leery sense that I was getting the wrong end of the deal, even though he and Weidel are obviously familiar. And so Andy would probably have a pretty good idea as to how Howie's mind works. I just have a lot of respect for how Roseman does that job. So I would say the Lions would be my preferred trading partner if it came to that for the reasons I laid out earlier. Like, do you think that a team is motivated by that kind of desperation a little bit? You can make the argument for the Niners
for all the shine that Shanahan gets, they still haven't won one. Look at what Washington did in the playoffs to Detroit.
No, not even that. I'm saying like franchise recent history. Detroit's obviously got to overcome the fact that they were the NFL's punchline for so long. And I think there's an urgency to win there and to really capitalize on like the momentum. The Niners still haven't won one. They've been like a media darling because everyone loves Shanahan's offense. The Eagles, in a way, are like they're chilling, man. Like they're the cock of the walk in the NFL right now.
Let me just give you a fun made up trade. Tell me if you guys do this. If you know, like, let's say they're really at a stalemate. Okay, so that way, like, even the people that are like Watt worshippers have to at least say, "I'll listen," because it doesn't seem like it's going anywhere. If the Lions called the Steelers and said, "We'll offer you Jameson Williams and a 2025 second round or 2026 second round pick, and we'll throw in a third round pick in 2027. So two day two picks in Jameson Williams for TJ Watt. Are we getting anywhere, Donnie? You're a football guy. You are the football guy. Are you
piqued the interest a little bit there.
I think the thing.
I mean, Williams had a pretty impressive
he's
year.
He's a phenomenal big play threat. I do think there's some validity to
get him off FanDuel. You know, take the.
No, I know, but there's also some validity. There's some validity to the idea that, like, how good is he outside of a Ben Johnson system that was designed to get him the ball in big play situations? We agree with that, like, a little bit. Like, they knew how to free him up in an offense that had Laporta, both backs, St. Brown, who's the best, like, pure possession, one of the best all-around guys in the league. You know what I would worry about with Williams, as much as I think he's an electrifying talent, is he going to be another wide receiver who breaks bad here? Not so much because he inherently is some bad guy, although remember how pissed off he looked when the Lions drafted him? Like, I have to go to Detroit, really? But I could see him getting frustrated if the offense doesn't find a way to make sure he's getting explosive touches.
That's what my fear would be. Although it's also another potential time for, hey, Mike Tomlin got the best out of this guy.
Well, you know what, though? I think Dan Campbell's becoming that kind of coach where, yes, these guys got in trouble, obviously, and did something they shouldn't have done. But it seems like Campbell is the new it guy for getting players who are basically willing to, like, sacrifice limbs on the field for him.
That just strikes me as the type of trade. If Schefter says teams are waiting and lurking in the weeds to see what happens with Watt, that just seems like the type of deal that the Lions would offer the Steelers, because they know the Steelers have
a wide receiver problem. They took that kid whose name looks like Tesla from Arkansas in the third round.
They drafted a wide receiver.
Yeah, they drafted a receiver. They actually drafted two. They drafted a kid from Georgia with their last pick.
So, you know, they've got some depth there. The Steelers don't...
They also have Laporta, who's basically their de facto second-best receiver
threat. The Steelers don't really
threat.
Need an edge rusher back if they were, hypothetically speaking, to trade Watt, because they've got Herbig and Sawyer.
Is Williams
there.
Too redundant, though, again, skill-wise, with DK Metcalf, because they're both just vertical big play threats? Like, you're just going to keep running go balls all the time?
Yes.
Is that going to work with the offensive line? I mean, I guess I have to hope it will. Does Rodgers want to throw a bunch of vertical stuff?
So you're saying you'd want more of a possession type receiver,
ideally?
St.
Brown would be like this. He's obviously a way better player than Jameson Williams, but he would be like this incredible fit where you have this guy who can do jack of all trades and run any route. He's very sure-handed, very reliable, and then here's DK Metcalf just running as fast as he can on verts.
But Detroit wouldn't do that because they're trying to win a Super Bowl.
St. Brown's their guy. I get. Yeah, that's why. You make an interesting proposal, and I know you've already considered everything we've said back to you here, and that's why you gave us that specific player. And picks. The second and third round picks aren't nothing either. Like, if next year's goal is to get a quarterback, you have more capital if you have an extra second round pick.
Okay, another one. Let's say San Francisco is the third best odd said, oh, that's what Detroit's offering. We'll do our second, our third, and the receiver we'll give you is Pearsall instead of Jameson Williams. Ooh. Do you like that better?
What if they would have made it Ayuk?
I heard that trade already was proposed. It was at the goal line, Don.
Thanks, guys.
Pearsall, and then their second and third?
Yeah. 2026 second and a 2027 third.
I like Pearsall as a player. He seemed to come back well.
He's younger, so you get more years of him.
Getting freaking shot.
Yeah. I mean, Williams is only 23. It's not
no,
like
Jameson
we're talking
Williams
about a guy.
No, but
like
I'm saying his contract, he's going to be re-upped sooner than Pearsall, because Pearsall was a rookie last year.
Yes. But Pearsall's actually an older person by like 200 days.
Interesting.
It's the old Justin Fields, Kenny Pickett bit. I like Pearsall. He's not as much of a big play threat. I think Williams is the more obviously like explosive player, but Pearsall seems like a guy who has a little bit more of a varied kind of route running role. Big guy too, 6'3". Like big dude. Also, he got shot and just kind of.
So you'd be sitting there at the table saying, guys, I mean, look at the way he came back from that bullet wound.
Football guy.
I'd rather have that guy than the dude who kept losing parlays and getting busted.
I mean, what deal would you take, just out of curiosity? Because I think it's really boils down to what you think of each receiver versus the other. And Williams' numbers are obviously better, and he's been a more productive player, but. The contractual control and projecting Pearsall is interesting.
I think I'd take the Detroit offer because I'm of the opinion that San Francisco is going to bounce back this year. So I don't think
they're drafted. Detroit's going to fade?
Maybe not fade.
I still think they're the best team in that division.
But I could see Chicago or Green Bay winning that division.
Well, you're a huge Ben. Well, so am I. I think Ben Johnson's really good. But you got to be a big Ben Johnson believer.
Are you guys also aware of how many picks the Eagles will have in 26?
Probably like 65.
How many is it?
So they have 10, and they're projected to have 13.
Howie's playing chess, brother. Everybody
else is
playing
checkers. The team that just won the Super Bowl is going to have potentially 13 picks. So they have, obviously, their own in rounds 1, 2, 3.
All right.
Four,
I've got
five, and
fake
seven.
John and Robinson. Do we want a fake John and Robinson proposal here? Because we know he loves this stuff. He lives for it.
So they have one in round one, one in round two. They have 3 picks in round 3 projected, 2 picks in round 4, 5 projected picks in round 5, and then 1 in round 7.
What if the Philly trade is the Eagles first in 2026?
Which will be a late first, most likely.
They're second in 2027. Mm-hmm. And the receiver you get is Jahan Dotson back.
Nah, I don't love the receiver there. I know it's the first.
You're getting the first instead.
You're probably getting pick 30, and then you're still, if you're assuming they're going to be really good, getting what, like pick 58?
So that one's the least interesting one to you, even though there's another first coming back.
Fake John and Robinson, I have to put it out there. You guys know he loves this. He lives for it. Watt and a third for New England's first, Jabril Peppers and Javon Baker. A first... A safety who's just, whatever.
I don't like that trade because I think New England's going to be good.
Well, if you think that they're going to be middle of the pack, the first gets a lot better. But if you think that they're going to make the playoffs as a sneaky playoff team, I think that one's all about the first round pick spot.
Baker had one catch for 12 yards last year.
I mean, he's a total projection.
The other reason why, like, the Philly one, would, even though it would be a first-round pick, the Steelers would say no to, is because I just think that that's too big of a drop-off. In terms of how they would help their team this year, you replace Watt on the roster with a number three wide receiver. At least Jameson Williams, you can make an argument like he might be a borderline number one wide receiver. You know, and who knows what Pearsall is. He really barely scratched the surface last year because of what happened to him.
Like I said, though, I'm impressed that a guy comes back after that kind of thing and still puts up 400 yards and is averaging 13 a catch. That's a pretty solid start to a career.
Listen to Starkey and Pomp, although this time of year it's one or the other or neither. To hear about the Starkey Card of the Week from Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry, contest runs every Wednesday through Friday at noon at the 93.7thefan.com contesting page. You can listen to our show, The PM Team, on demand. It's everywhere. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. That's where we find our 93.7 The Fan MLB analyst, Matt Clement, with a lot of Pirates All-Star game news today. O'Neill Cruz, the home run derby. Paul Skeens picked Sunday night to pitch in the game. He'll probably start again, I would guess. Matt, he got pulled at 78 pitches, five innings, 10 strikeouts. He is near the top of the league in innings pitched. We've never talked to you about this before. Where do you come down in this age-old debate about being extra, extra careful with young pitchers and making sure there's not a big innings jump from one year to the next?
I mean, I think it's part of the game right now that you have to deal with. You know, as far as the specific what just happened, I mean, take it back another start. He had 88 through 5 with the Cardinals, and then he comes back with 78 through 5 in the Seattle, which, you know, looking at it now as a historically bad series, you really want to win that game to keep the momentum of what happened on the homestand. And I wonder what will happen Friday, because then you're going to bring him back on this All-Star occurrence will happen on 3 days rest rather than the 4 days rest, the normal time. So you're kind of full. I would rather let him go as 110 pitches and skip them on Friday, try to win that game. And then you build in some like longer rest for him with a short outing on Tuesday. You know, just a personal opinion when thinking about the whole subject. But I mean, you have to be careful with him. He's your franchise. He's the moneymaker. He's the person that's people are coming to see. And if you do make a run in the next 3 or 4 years, he is going to be square in the middle of it. There's no way that's not the case.
Matt, give me like the true answer here as best you can. The guys in that clubhouse, they know what their record is, right? They know that they're back on a losing skid after winning 6 in a row. What's the impact of having the GM flat out say, yeah, we altered his calendar here, his schedule, to allow him to pitch in the All-Star game? Are guys frustrated by that kind of thing? If he's pulled after 78 pitches, if this next outing might be a very short one, or do players generally say, well, we kind of know where we are in the standings, I get why they're doing this?
I think you're dealing with like a generational talent here. We're not talking about somebody else's number one. We're talking about the best pitcher in baseball. I mean, let's think about this. He's 4-7. He might start the All-Star game. I mean, that's how he's thought of. That's how good he is. And he's a generational talent. So I think the players are going to understand the situation better than probably than everybody would think they would. They know that they're not going anywhere without him. They know at some point they're going to cut him back, whether it be move him to the sixth day or whatever the case may be, because they're trying to be careful and gradually move him up year by year. So I don't think that the players are looking at it that way. Even if they were in the pennant race, I think that there'd be a little bit of, because there's such wiggle room with what you're going to do with this guy to make sure he stays healthy, that it's not like an issue that's just like right in your face and you know what exactly should be or shouldn't be happening.
Matt, you pitched, you were an All-Star. I'm curious, like, what thing do you think is more relevant to protecting a pitcher? Is it pitch count within a game, or is it like cumulative innings over a season?
I think it's, you know, you have to watch the pitch count within the game. And I mean, you're talking to somebody that went, you know, 5 years in the minors and made 28 starts and threw like close to 180 innings, 160 to 200 innings in my minor league career. So it's a totally different world right now, but there's totally different money involved right now too. Mm-hmm. And I just believe, like, to me, pitch count, you know, understanding, handling the situation, it comes down to the stressful pitches, in my opinion. That's the biggest part of this thing that nobody gets. Like, you can go seven, throw 105 to 110 pitches in seven innings, and it'd be way less stressful than throwing 95 in five innings where you have the first two guys on every inning and you have to figure a way out of it. The best of the innings, how easy the pitches come, is you know, to me, the bigger factor in the grand scheme of things. And let's be honest, like, you know, we talked about Skeens a little bit here and there, but we never got to this point. Like, teams are attacking him to get his pitch count up. That's what I'd be doing too. Like, I would be, you know, I would be making sure we get that in the fifth, sixth inning up to get him out of there. As good as the bullpen's been amazing for the Pirates, but as good as the bullpen's been, you don't want to be facing Skeens if you have the choice.
So just to build on that, Matt, would you say that like almost a pitch count within a particular inning is more worrisome to you if you're like saying what could affect him negatively? If he has to throw 40 pitches in an inning or 35 pitches in a given inning, that might be a bigger issue for a guy's arm health. If he has to do that start in and start out, there's always like one late laborious inning, than just like an overall pitch count, like keeping the stressful innings to an absolute minimum.
Absolutely. I think that's got to be part of the read in the grand picture, in my opinion. Like, from somebody that unfortunately had a lot of 30 to 40 pitch innings in his career, knowing what that felt like going back out after those innings, it's stressful on the arm, it's stressful on the body. When your body, you know, and he's in phenomenal shape, he looks like he could pitch. The tough part about Skeens is he looks like he's never tired. He looks like he could throw 200 pitches and not get tired. He looks like he's indestructible when he's out there pitching and facing people, because he's put himself in that position. But I feel like, you know, there's more number, a certain number of pitches, a certain number of innings. There's that part in the middle of there, how you get to those is big. And another, you know, he's hard to hit. So you're either, you know, walking or striking out a lot of the time, and you're not usually making contact early because of his stuff is so good, so that puts that pitch count higher.
Matt Clement, our 93.7 The Fan MLB analyst with us. Matt, I want to get to O'Neill Cruz in the Home Run Derby, but one more on Skeens. When he was pulled at 78 pitches, he seemed fine with it. His post-game comments were made it seem like he was completely on board. There was no negative body language or bad body language whatsoever. Everybody I've talked to with the Pirates makes it seem like he gives it a thumbs up. And like, I also think that that's a different psychology or way of looking at it, mindset. Like, I think back to your era, which is not too long ago, I don't think a guy would have wanted to be pulled after 5, 10 strikeouts, 78 pitches, 0-0 game, right? Mentalities have changed, I would say.
Absolutely. But I also say with when it comes to Skeens, like, first off, we don't know what was said before the game. You know, he might have known that already.
I think he did. And I think my guess is he did, Matt.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that makes him so likable and easy to root for and so easy for a franchise to kind of rally behind is, like, there could be a pitcher that comes out and is like, this is dumb, this is stupid. He's going to say the right thing whether he believes it or not. So we can't, you know, do we really know? Skeens is pretty well schooled in how he talks to the media and what he says and what he believes. And he just took the guy to me, especially at this point in his career, it's going to sell out the franchise. I mean, think about his comments pre-season this year about, you know, when trades or he's going to leave in 6 years. And he's like, I want to win here.
Yep.
I'm here. I want to win here. I want to bring it here. And that's important to him. And I think of those comments, and I just think somebody like him, that's how I would have been. Not that I'm anywhere near Skeens, but in my talent level, but I would have never, upset or not, I was smart enough to know, like this is what they're doing. I'm going to deal with it. If I have a problem with it, behind closed doors.
Matt, let's go from a guy who's thrown some of the hardest pitches we've seen recently to a guy who has technically got the hardest hit ball in the history of StatCast on his resume, O'Neill Cruz. He gets added to the Home Run Derby despite almost 40 players across baseball having more home runs than his 15 this year. What do you make of his addition? Is that seen as like an honor? Like, do you look at that as he's not a deserving player to be in it because his numbers overall aren't that great? How do you view O'Neill Cruz getting added to the Derby?
Well, I'm going to say it this way. I look at the Derby, and I think the MLB got it right. You know, my issue is, if you want to compare it to a similar sport, like, look at the slam dunk contest. And they're bringing a guy in from the
G League,
developmental league, to get people to watch it, you know? And here, like, I want to see the guys that hit the ball the furthest and the hardest or whatever the case may be. I guess my argument, let's get like Judge and De La Cruz and Stanton in there too with to throw them all up against it. I get your point. I didn't realize there was 40 people that had more home runs than him, but this is a fan thing. And like, I think the MLB has this right. If the rules were taking the best ones and all of a sudden we're like, well, Cruz hits it hard, let's throw him in there too, you know, because some people want to see that, but those kind of haven't been the rules of late. And the rules have kind of skewed from the original derbies back in the day on how they do it. So I think they got it right. It's exciting. Like I might actually tune in a little more to see it, to see what he does to a ball, and you know, in that stadium.
Who put on the best batting practice show in person from your day in Major League Baseball?
Well, I mean, the Mark McGwire show during this, you know, I was in the middle of that whole Sosa McGwire. I got called up the year they had the show off, but you know, that where they went off against each other trying to break the record, but had the, you know, so the next year I wasn't really part of it. I got called up, but that next year they were so popular and so crazy. Like, I'm not going to lie, I walked out to watch McGwire take BP. and you know, as far as teammates of mine that I had, like, I mean, Manny Ramirez and Big Poppy were incredible to watch do it. I'm not going to, again, I won't lie and say I didn't watch like Barry Bonds when he was going for 70 home runs, go out there and take his BP also. I probably would have lied back in the day because I wouldn't want to look like I was checking that out as an opposing pitcher. But like, I've got to, you know, those guys are so, they're so good. And kind of, you know, a funny story, when I was in the All-Star game, you know, one of the stories that was flying around that All-Star game in the locker room that year was, you know, if they put Ichiro in this home run derby, he'd win it every time. Like, he had the ability to win it every time.
And didn't he also have like some obscenity filled speech he'd give before every All-Star game? That was a rumor I heard that he would do that.
I believe that happened. That happened post my All-Star game, okay. But I have heard that for sure. But like, him and the funny thing is about those great, great hitters that people probably don't realize is, you know, Tony Gwynn was the same way. Like, I'd hear those guys on the bench. I was with the veterans that were with the Padres at the time, and they'd say, hey, if Tony Gwynn wants to hit a home run, he's going to go hit a home run. And you know, and he could hit 30, 35 home runs. He wouldn't bat 340, he'd bat 315. But he takes pride in his batting average and how he does things. And I think Ichiro is that same way. And I, you know, I've heard that Ichiro like put on a ridiculous display in BP when he wanted to go out there and hit home.
Hey, Matt, speaking of great hitters, I'm wondering if, and this might be, the answer might be no. I know you spent the 2001 season with them. Miguel Cabrera would have been an 18-year-old kid in A-ball the year you were with the Marlins in their system. Did you happen to cross paths like with him as far as spring training or anything like that? And did you see marks of greatness that were to come if you did? Like, do you have any very young Miggy Cabrera stories?
I don't have a specific story, but I remember it very vividly. You know, there was this, he was on shortstop when that next spring training when I rolled into, he was on shortstop.
Wow.
And you could just see it. And there was a lot of hype around him. Like, this wasn't, you know, this was kind of the De La Cruz hype and the O'Neill Cruz hype, that kind of hype for a young kid. And I remember, like, the little bit I remember is seeing him work out at, like, shortstop during big league spring training. And you know, and then when he got called up and started doing what he did, it wasn't even, like, the least bit of a surprise to me. Man. I mean, he was so thin at the time. He was such a, you know,
he was
a little kid. He was out of high school.
If you were going to nominate a pitcher from when you played to participate in the home run derby, who would you pick?
Well, I might have some people call me and be mad at me. You know, I had three Cubs teammates that could really hit, and that would be Kerry Wood, and who hit a home run in game 7 of that after the Bartman incident.
Yep.
To tie the game.
The roof Mark came Pryor off that place when he hit that. I still watch that highlight. That place came unglued when he hit it.
Absolutely the loudest environment I've ever been in my life. I could feel the stadium shaking during that home run when he was running the bases. Mark Pryor is a DH at USC, in the lineup, DH at USC, and he could really hit. Mm-hmm. I and then the other guy is Carlos Zambrano.
I knew you were going to say
who
that.
Yeah. Probably he has the most home runs of that crew. But all three of them, like, think about me taking BP with those guys. I was like, you know, these guys, and I had Greg Maddux, who like really took pride in it that year, who was who could be close to a 300 hitter at times during his career. So I was like the dude that was like hanging on the side and grabbing Sosa's bats and trying to hit him on the wavelength.
The Zambrano stat that is insane, Pony. Are you aware of this, Matt? You might not be either. He had one. He was worth almost 1.5 wins as a hitter.
Wow!
In the 2008 season, he had an almost 900 OPS. Tremendous. That is ridiculous.
That is really good. Hey, Matt, thank you so much for making it work this week. We'll talk again on next Tuesday. Okay.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Matt Clement, everybody, our 93.7 The Fan MLB analyst. Time for another trip inside the Bucco Auction House. Before we do that, a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township, southhillskia.net. And Donnie, who will be coaching in the Cam Hayward Celebrity Softball game on Monday. A mainstay in that event has been Pat Freiermuth, but he has other commitments this year. If you want to see a great sit-down interview where Donnie gets Pat to really talk more about his life journey and place in Pittsburgh and things like that, really in-depth conversation, go to our YouTube page and check out Breaking Bread, brought to you by Saloni's Italian Bread, because they are sitting down together for a lunch. Was it lunch food or are you eating dinner food at lunchtime? What would you say there? Was it like sandwiches?
Soups? I would say closer to dinner food, like food you would expect to eat at dinner.
Yeah, we had multiple courses. The spiral, very, very good.
The spiral lasagna. Chef Anthony, awesome.
Did dinner turn into lunch that day? Like, hey, I had a massive dinner lunch, so I'm going to eat a lighter dinner. I'll do that.
Would you call it linner or dunch if you were going to do that?
Linner. I've done that. Like, yeah, I had a massive lunch.
Yeah, I guess
lunch, so
yeah, dinner was probably lighter that
dinner
day.
Ended up being like a turkey sandwich.
There are times I'll skip dinner if I really have an extravagant lunch, but that's very rare.
It's a straight up skip.
Well, sometimes it's like problematic too.
It's got to be a gigantic lunch. Would you have Thanksgiving?
Well, Pony, if like
you
here's
skip
the other
dinner
part.
Altogether.
If I have a big lunch here, if there's like, you know, like the Tim's Corner Market subs today, if I maybe indulge a little more, and especially like a night like tonight, Alex is working. You know what I'm going to get home and make? Dino nuggets for the kids.
And then just pick
and then
on
it's going to be like, did they eat it all? No. Okay, I guess Dad's eating Dino nuggets
all right.
for dinner.
Did Malzi officially lose the Tommy Pham bet?
Last
Fam's
day on the Pirates
last
roster.
Day on
yeah.
the Pirates yep. roster. He's
put
still
it in
here.
The red. Great. I forgot. I was scanning it and I scanned right over that.
He's
put
still
it in the red.
That did cross
here.
My mind last night.
So a loss for Malzi.
Hold on. There we go.
He got new eyes.
It was the same. Hey, guess
and
what?
He hit on the ball same, long way last night.
On the
too.
Same May 20th auction house, Malzi gaveth and Malzi tooketh away.
All right. So we'll do another Fam related one to start. Tommy Pham's batting average this season. 2025 batting average
ever,
for Tommy Pham.
His whole season, even if it gets traded yep. now.
I'll go over 190. Going once.
I'll go 195.
I'll go 199.
I'll go 200.
201.
I'll go 202.
I'll go 203.
I'll go 204.
I'll go 212.
213
to Donnie.
You never know. Keratoconus debilitating. I have it in my left eye.
And what's happening to it?
I can't get LASIK. And I genuinely sympathize
it's
with
him.
It's
one of Malzi's.
That and
Darius
Raynaud's
Darius Raynaud's syndrome.
213 to who?
Donnie.
Going once?
215.
215 to Malzi. Tommy Pham batting average. 215 to Malz. Going once. Going twice. Sold, you bought him, 215.
Feel good about that one, man. He's at 238 right now.
Yeah, and he couldn't hit for the first 2 months, Malzi. When's that going to pop up again?
Career 257 hitter.
Yes, he's also 37 years old, so at what he did in his career
the last time
might
he,
not be relevant.
The last time he had a stint with any team, he had the 206 stint with St. Louis last year for 77 games. Then he hit 228 with the Royals. Aside from that 206 stint, the last time he hit under 215 for any chunk of any season was 2020.
I didn't feel comfortable with it, Don. Did you?
215 was my cutoff point. So once Malzi hit it there, that was all she wrote.
O'Neill Cruz home runs in the Home Run Derby. He was announced as a participant today. I really have no idea how this works. I'll say more than five. This is total, every round combined.
I'll say over. I'll say six.
Seven.
Eight.
Nine.
10.
11.
I'll go 12.
13. 13 home runs, O'Neill Cruz in the Derby. Over 13 to me. Going once. Going twice.
14.
Oh, hello. 15.
More than 15 home runs for Cruz in the Derby. To me, going once. Going twice.
What are you trying to do
Sold.
Here? Yeah, he was trying to elicit a bet.
Because I feel like Donnie's got all these Cruz props that he's lost this year, is in the process of losing, that I was trying to get him to maybe
you can't
redeem himself.
How many do I have with him?
You have his home runs. You have his OPS, I think.
You have his steals number, Pony, which I have he steals, needs to get to like. 49 to win, for you to win.
I don't mind that.
I thought somebody else took his
Oh,
OPS.
Wait a minute. Hold on. We have to honor something for Donnie. Yeah. He pulled an incredible rabbit out of the hat. He has notched one in the win column. Over 12 Pirates wins in June.
Yeah, we knew that. We went over that.
We hadn't. When was the last time we did an auction house?
We all talked about it last week.
I wanted to formally, in the auction house itself, honor him.
Yeah, we did that last time.
We weren't in the auction house.
I thought I only had his home runs.
Oh, I thought you had his OPS, too. I might be wrong.
The Cruz OPS is actually me, over 775. Don't love that. Mm.
And I need what? Good. I think 12 more home runs.
You need. He's got 15. You need 12 for a push and 13.
You know
for
what,
the whole
Donnie? You're not. Out, you're not out of it there. I wouldn't say
what?
You're.
I said for the whole kit and caboodle. What is a kit and a caboodle?
Mitch Keller. Nothing. Mitch Keller wins in 2025.
Oh boy.
I'll say over three.
I'll say over four, or I'll say four.
Five.
And we're getting late early already here.
God. Six.
Seven.
Oh. Talking some real regression to the mean stuff.
Seven
here.
Mitch Keller wins to me, going once, going twice. Sold.
You can have it.
Damn
man.
It. I hate you. You guys. Can have
six,
it.
Six was the cutoff point there.
You can have that one.
I'm already
boy.
Down bad with Skeens.
Come on, trade.
I mean, Jesus, the guy will throw a no hitter and they'll still lose the game.
Yeah, he'd throw like the Harvey Haddix 2.0.
Come on.
Get pulled after 12 perfect.
Come on, Mitch.
So what, that's 7 plus for Pony?
He's got to get to 8.
He's got to get to 8.
Got to get to 8.
7's a push.
Mitch had 1 as of 3 weeks ago. Not even. As of 2 weeks ago,
he's
Mitch
the stopper.
Had 1.
They're going to win tonight for him.
What
he likes to pitch
Paul
deep
Skeens?
Into the games. The super stopper?